week for the month of January. Just 4 weeks, we're going to talk about money, to be honest with you. That's our topic, money and finances. And my intention here is to be very real and honest and very practical with you about what the Bible says about money. We're not doing this so that you'll give more money to the church. This is not a give appeal, like we're in dire straits or finances are bad or anything like that. That is not what this is. On the fourth week, I'll be honest with you, we will give you a very real assessment of where we are as a church financially speaking, so you know where because you all have been participating in it. So you'll see where we're at financially and where we're trying to go. That's transparency, okay? That's all that is. But really what we're trying to get at is to be practical about how you and me and all of us together can be free from financial stress. We can have financial freedom in our lives, and we're not stuck and bound to week-to-week paycheck or debt. So each week has a general theme that will guide our conversation. I've created them in such a way that it's approachable for everybody at no matter what economic background you have. We have a diverse congregation in terms of socioeconomic background, so I hope that you will hear something that will help you financially and spiritually throughout our time together on this particular topic. So today we're talking about the principle of sowing and reaping. In other words, you get what you pay for. And that's kind of where we're at today. You get what you pay for, the principle of sowing and reaping. And all of this started, like this idea for this topic, it started back just before Christmas, when I know people were going around and buying gifts for the kids, and there's like, Christmas is great, and Christmas is going to be over real soon, now I have to figure out how to pay for it. How am I going to pay for Christmas? And so that's what generated this idea, because I know people put those things on layaway or credit card or whatever it is. So the credit card's going to come due at the first of the month or maybe the first of the next month, however you purchase that. But maybe you had to even borrow some money to pay for Christmas for the kids, or mom and dad lent you some money so you could do that. Whatever it is, I don't know, maybe things aren't right for you personally in your own personal finances, and you're in crisis mode, perhaps. And maybe that rings true for some of you. I don't know it specifically for anybody, so I'm not talking to anybody in particular. But there's several levels of financial freedom or slavery that people can be in. Maybe it's full-on crisis time for you. And financially speaking, things are not going well for you. Some folks might be in there at this moment. State of crisis. That's the first one. Second level might be, it's not quite crisis, but folks live paycheck to paycheck. And if a crisis should occur, it would just sink that family and they would be down and have crisis, you know. And then there's other people who don't live paycheck to paycheck. Maybe they have a little bit of savings, a little bit of retirement. Things are moving along. Crisis comes around. It's a blow, but it doesn't kill you. Honestly, that's kind of where we're at, you know, like, hey, we go okay, we're doing all right, God's blessed us, we don't need for anything, things are fine. But if a crisis came up, it'd hurt, but it wouldn't take us down. And then maybe there's other people here right now who've been applying biblical principles for decades, and you have wisdom and experience to lend to the mix, and things are okay with you. And then if that's the case, then I hope you can hear from these series of sermons some spiritual content that will help guide you as time goes on. So the information that we've collected for these messages, I've pulled from different resources. I didn't generate it. You know, like the Bible has it already, okay? And I'll tell you if I've grabbed it from some other resource, because I don't want to be accused of like plagiarism or whatever, because I've lifted this from other things. I'm not an expert in financial matters. But we have somebody in our congregation who is. So Nolan Cox, I'd ask him to come up last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I don't remember when it was now. I was really fretting about this series because it's like, I don't have expertise in these things. I always just find good people to do it for us. Sue Dodson takes care of all the money here at Engage and Little Arrows, and So I don't have to worry about it. Come on up. Nolan, I've known for several years now. He's been coming to church with us at this location at Marn for several years, and he is a, he works for Edward Jones, and he, for a living, he makes money for other people. Okay? I think that's generally...
That's pretty accurate.
Okay, all right. So I've asked Nolan to be the residential expert for this series, and next week he's going to talk to us a little bit, but today I've asked them just to come in, give us a perception of what's happening with the markets, because we see it going down and then we see it going up quickly. And for instance, Thursday, I think the Dow lost 600 points, mm-hmm. something like that. And I only knew that because we went to a basketball game, and I had to take care of the food for the kids, you know, like the meal. And so I turned in the sheets to the person who's running that little program, and he is a financial investor. And he says, "Where's my paperclip that goes with the sheets?" I said, "I'm sure your investment company can afford a paperclip." He goes, "The Dow lost 600 points today. I don't know if we can afford anything." And the next day it went up 700 points. So I don't know, you know, what's going on. So Nolan, just give us a trend. What do you think is happening? And I don't know, whatever we talked about the other day.
Sure. So I am not an expert. That was a false statement. So I'm not going to hold myself out to that. But I will do my best. So what's going on right now? When we talk about reaping and sowing, when we look at those two things, everybody says, well, you know, we plant some seeds in the ground, and I grew up as a farmer, and then October comes around, and we pick the corn. And with investing, you think about, okay, we put our money in, and then at some point in the future, we're going to get more out than what we put in. But along the way, we forget the fact that we had drought and flooding, and the beetle killed the crops or something like that. Everybody kind of forgets about that and looks at point A and point B. So right now, when you look out at the market and you watch the news, my favorite thing is every month or so I have somebody that calls me up, and he generally tells me that the world is ending. And I said, "You probably saw that on the news this morning, and the Dow must be down about 700 points." And he said, "Yeah, how did you know that?" I said, "Well, I'm looking at it right now too." So with that, you know, when we're watching the news, they don't really get paid to share good stories. I would imagine nobody in here can recite for me what the headline of the best news story was last week, but everybody remembers all the horrible things. And that's generally what they like to report with the market. So you look at the last couple of months, we had October the 3rd, the Dow Jones hit an all-time high, 26,931, I think it was, intraday. And from that point forward, dropped 19%. And that's pretty normal. But you'd be led to believe that it's not normal because it hasn't happened not quite 10 years. It'll be 10 years if we make it to March. Normally, it happens every three. So that's another thing. We have to have good expectations. I don't come to church every week with the expectation that for doing so, I'm going to win the lottery next week. And that's, you know, and that would be kind of ridiculous to say that, but sometimes we get this expectation that, hey, we're invested and we're doing all the right things and it's always going to be good things. That's not always going to be the case, so we want to have good expectations. So with that, what are our expectations at my company? What do we think about? Well, you know, we look at the economy. What ultimately drives, you know, your portfolios, if you're saving for retirement, what drives the Dow if you're watching the news? In the short run, it's two things, and those two things are fear and greed, a lot like our daily lives. You know, if we're afraid of things, we generally make bad decisions. If we get greedy, we also tend to make fairly bad decisions, and you can kind of see that as things have shifted here and in the news, and when people get afraid of their investments, they tend to sell them. And anybody here own a house in 2008 or 9? Show of hands. Okay, quite a few people. Who here had the value of their home go down in 2008 and 9? Pretty much everybody, because that is what happened in the housing market. Did anybody go, "Man, this thing's down in value, let's get rid of it. It's horrible, piece of junk." Last week it was great because it was worth a lot more, but today it's worth nothing, so we're gonna sell it. That sounds pretty ridiculous when we talk about our homes or anything else. When we talk about our investments, people like to say, "Oh, you know what, it's down in value, got to sell it, no good anymore." And that's generally the fear aspect. And then there's the greed aspect. Anybody remember Bitcoin? Probably saw that on the news. You know that Bitcoin traded for like a dollar a coin a few years ago? And then it traded for $1,700 a coin in the last year. Did anybody here want to buy it when it was a dollar? No, because it's a risky investment and it's not worth anything, and who would ever use that? But at $1,700, everybody wants to own that. So we get greedy when we see things that have done well, and those are generally the kind of the opposite reactions we'd like to see. So looking forward expectations, it's been 9 years since we had a downturn. On average, you ought to expect those about every three. So statistically speaking, you'd probably want to have the expectation that a 20% downturn is at some point in the future. One thing that you probably saw last week, if you read the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday, Apple says that their company's not going to do as well because global growth is slowing down. That's going to be a theme across the board in terms of the global financial markets. As they slow down, economies slow down, it'd be a good time to maybe save a little bit more money in your emergency savings if you're not already doing that. Because ultimately, Dave talks about financial freedom, probably the best thing to do is have emergency cash for things that come along. So we do kind of expect rough waters ahead, but like when we're coming here to church, not every day is going to be a good day. But if you keep the faith, you will be rewarded in the long term. And that's pretty much everything we talked about.
Great.
Thanks.
Compared to me, he's an expert. Thank you, Nolan. Thank you for sharing that with us. And next week, as we get into other topics, he's going to share with us more content, more things that are better for him to tell you than for me, because I can help you with the spiritual side of things, and he can do the financial side of things better than I can. And it's not an advertisement for Nolan to go to his company, but you can and have him do that, but that's not the intention. So I want to do basically this. Inside your folder there that you received, you have three cultural myths about finances and money, and then we're going to give you three biblical truths, and the last truth I'll explain more fully. Here's three cultural myths that we have about money. First is things bring happiness. That's a myth. Things bring happiness. In America, we are fantastic consumers. In fact, our entire economy is based on consumerism. We have to consume so that people can have jobs. That's basically it. In the recession of 2007, 2008, that was part of the big problem. People quit buying things because the markets were uncertain. When people quit buying things like houses and cars, then manufacturing dries up. And when manufacturing dries up, then jobs are lost. And then jobs are lost and people can't afford to buy things. And that's a very simplistic explanation of the effect of that recession. But in order for our economy to be humming along, we need to be buying things. And that is why advertisers have gotten so good at what they do. Last Sunday, before worship, there was a gathering right over here with me and Mike Peters and all these young people. I would call them kids, but I'm sure they're all adults by now. The worship team last week, Carrie wasn't here, and the team, it was a different group, and they were all in their like early 20s. You'd say, Mike, about 20, something like that. And so we got on this topic of like, if you say something on your phone, even if you've never searched it on your phone before and never talked about it before, if you say something to somebody else, suddenly an advertisement for that thing will pop up for you. And that scares the living daylights out of me and Mike. But for those kids, they were like, yeah, whatever. it's like they grew up with it. No problem. But it's scary stuff to me because people want to know what we consume so they can sell more product to us. Does that make sense? So that's what happens. We consume. When we consume, they make money. When they make money, more jobs are created and more people are buying things at a higher level. The economy is going. So here's what else happens. When you consume something, when you buy something that you like or you want something that's better than what your neighbor has, I know some people have that, like, I just need to have a better light display than my neighbor has. I know people like that. I know people who need a better truck. You know how that goes. You know how it goes. That happens. But when we get it, we get a dopamine rush. Something happens in our head, psychologically speaking, physically speaking. Scientists and psychologists have been studying this for decades. I read this on multiple sources, but NeuroTracker website says our brains are chemically wired to respond to a deal. We think we got a deal, and our brain just goes, bam, yeah, I feel good because I stuck it to the man. I got a deal on it. And if we think we're getting a good deal, then our brains respond with a similar level of dopamine that would give you the same feeling as addictions to food, drugs, and alcohol, believe it or not. That instant we decide to buy, we feel good about what we've done. We have a rush of positive emotions, but afterwards, similar to an addiction to drugs, alcohol, or even food, we have this feeling of guilt that takes over, because then indulging in that thing can actually make it more difficult to rebound. That's according to Kit Yarrow, who's a consumer psychologist. There's things called consumer psychologists. We need more. We have to have more. We need that high again, so we have to keep consuming and consuming and consuming to get more. Our culture tells us that we have to have things to make us happy. Our brains even tell us that the conquest of all things will make us happy. But I hope that you know that it's a myth. That is a myth. Because we all know the stories of the wealthy old loner who dies on a big pile of money and laments the fact that they never invested in any relationships. Or you think of Scrooge, you know. Scrooge has all that money, and then finally he realizes he needs to invest in people. Because we can't take those things with us anyway. They don't make us happy. Things do not bring happiness. In fact, most of the time, more things bring more stress because it's something else that we have to be responsible for and we have to worry about. So the first thing is, first cultural myth is things bring happiness. And the second one is debt is expected and unavoidable. So cultural myth, debt is expected and unavoidable. And we're going to talk about debt next week. So I'm not going to talk about it too much. This myth is related to the first one because as Americans, we have bought into the myth that things bring happiness. So we go into debt to bring ourselves something, consume something that will bring us happiness. Myself included, when I first started out, I assumed I'm going to have a student loan for at least the next 15 years, turned into almost 20. No, I'm just... See, I got that master's degree. I had to pay for it somehow. I assumed I would have student debt. I assumed I would have a car payment or two. I assumed I'd probably have a mortgage at some point. I assumed I would have another little note on household maintenance or things like that. It's just an assumption. It's the cost of doing life. It's how you do it. Now, add on to that, some people have a mountain of debt of credit cards, and the debt just keeps piling up and piling up. What I've learned and matured in is that debt is avoidable and debt is a choice. There are times when maybe a little bit of debt makes a whole lot of sense, but we'll talk about that more next week, so I'm going to leave it at that for now. Just say this, it's a myth that debt is unavoidable too. Debt is unavoidable, that's a myth. All right, here's the last of the myths that we'll talk today. A little more money will solve all your problems. That's a myth. A little more. If I just had a little bit more money, everything would be okay. Right after college, I spent about 6 weeks right between college and when we got married and moved away, working for a landscaping company. And when I say landscaping company, I mean a guy who had some mowers, right, and a real good heart, you know, and a hard worker. And so I cut grass for him for $6 an hour. I walked behind these mowers for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days. It felt like days. It was about 6 weeks. But all kinds of crappy weather. Instead of mowing, we would trim bushes and spread mulch. And it so happened that one day we were spreading mulch at, you know, those like retirement centers that you... like are the kind of like the assisted living places, and there's like all these tiny little parking lots, and between each one has bushes and mulch, right? So there's just tons of these things around, and we're trimming, and it's raining cats and dogs, and we're spreading mulch, and we're filthy dirty. Well, next door there's another one of these places, And there's about eight guys doing the same thing over there. And so I went over there to get, I took a little break and took a drink, and I was talking to those guys. I was making $6 an hour doing this, okay? They were making $8.50 doing the same thing. $8.50. And I was like, man, I could get another $2.50 if I was working. And I'd have seven other guys helping me. Not, I'd be helping them or whatever. It's just me working here with this other guy. And so I was really frustrated. I'm only making $6 an hour doing the same thing they're doing over there. Suddenly I thought a little bit more money would go a long way to helping solve all of my problems. Here's the thing. It's a universal rule that when we expend the amount of income that we make. Very few people, no matter what level of income they have, very few people are satisfied with what they bring in. So if you bring in $25,000 a year, I promise you, you think $30,000 and you will have it made. But the person who's making $125,000 thinks, man, if I just had $130,000, I would have it made. I would be great. But every time you bump up a level, you will consume to the level that you are at. A little bit more money won't solve all your problems. In fact, a lot of times, it'll make it more complicated. And it won't solve anything. A little bit more money will never solve anything until you get your spending under control and bring your mindset around to a biblical understanding of ownership. And that's what we're going to talk about next. The three biblical truths. These come from the Bible. I did not write them. Here's number one. God owns everything. When it comes to your personal belongings and everything you see and everything you do and everything you use, know this, God owns it. God owns it, at least according to the Bible. Check out these couple verses. Deuteronomy 8, 17 through 18 says, "Beware lest you say in your heart, 'My power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth.' You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth, that He may confirm His covenant that He swore to your fathers as it is this day." And then further on in Deuteronomy 10, 14, "Behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth and all that is in it." It's important. So it's more important than just the elementary acknowledgement of, well, God owns everything. You know, it's like a little kid answer, you know, God owns it. Well, no. Understanding and living by the fact that God owns everything is important because that truth impacts how we view our belongings, how we view our jobs, how we view how we interact with things. When I own everything, it's mine to control because I worked really hard to get it. I manufactured it. I worked on this. I'm the one who went and got the education. I did all that. So it's mine. But when I recognize that God owns everything, it changes my perspective. And suddenly I'm not the owner, I'm just the manager. I take care of it. But since I know I can't take it with me, I simply distribute to the things that God leads me to distribute to. Sometimes I get things in return for it. And then I can't brag about my role in possessing it. I can't blast others for not having it. I can't be jealous of someone else who has more of it than me. I can only simply use what God has given me to use for the time being in which God has given me to use it. Does that make sense? God owns it. I'm just using it. It means that I am the manager. So if, for you, if you view that God owns it, then you are the manager of what God has given you. Here's the second thing. You can only serve one master. Jesus said it this way, Matthew 6, 24. "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." I keep the stat book for Sarah's sixth grade travel basketball team. And I like to keep the book because this team has been together for three seasons, and I think they've won about five games. So keeping the book, it's not Sarah's fault. She works really hard. We play teams that are above our level, Division I. We should not be playing Division I, but that's what they do. So anyway, I keep the book because it means I sit at the scorer's table. And when you sit at the scorer's table, you're supposed to be impartial. If I'm not at the scorer's table, then I yell at the refs. I'll yell at the players. I might even question the coach. And what will certainly happen, I will get bruised ribs by the elbow of accountability that sits beside me during the ball game. So I sit at the scorer's table and I keep the book. A couple weeks ago, the girls got a win from a terribly inferior opponent from a school in the rural north of us that wears primarily green. I'll not say their name, but their mascot rhymes with Schmikings. We played this team. They made us look really, really good. And the coaches were very frustrated by their players on that team. But there were three coaches all shouting different instructions to the players. You could see the frustration on the kids because they didn't know what to do or what to listen to because three different men on the sidelines were giving them three different instructions of what to do. And the coaches were mad because none of the kids were doing what they told them to do. And the kids were frustrated because they kept hearing all these competing things. Look, you can only serve one master. There should only be one voice on the sideline, which is why I sit by the scorer's table. You can only serve one master. In this series, we're talking about money in particular, but do you serve the God of money or do you serve the God of the universe? Because you can't serve them both. They have competing agendas. When we turn our ownership over to God, then we start to serve God as our only master. And then the final truth I want to uncover, and we're going to go a little bit deeper in on, is this. You reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. I really like this principle, and biblically, that's how you say it. You reap what you sow. But I think everyone may just be familiar enough about farming to know what that means, and Nolan kind of explained that a little bit. But there are other ways to say it that might sound a little bit more familiar. Here's another way. What goes around comes around, right? You've probably heard that before. Or the term karma. Not karma sitting here, but karma. Like you get back what you've put in. Do good, good will follow you. And in the financial sense, you get what you pay for. And the idea is the amount of investment that you have in one thing will determine the amount of return that you have in that same thing. It's a spiritual law, not just financial. It's true for everything. So if you invest in family and relationships, guess what? You're going to have a family that loves you and supports you. The relationships will stand the test of time. If you only care about your job, then you'll probably rise up through the corporate ladder or whatever very quickly. You'll excel at your job. You climb to the top quickly. If you only care about sports and working out or whatever, then you'll probably find that you see some good gains with a Z in there. It's efficient. Right, Luke? You all know this to be true. Especially right now, this time of year, people have made some New Year's resolutions. People are setting goals for 2019. If you're trying to take on a new habit, a new discipline, then you have to really invest in that thing that you have decided to do. Maybe time, maybe money. Otherwise, you'll just forget about it and just go back to the way things have always been. You'll lose whatever gain you had. So you reap what you sow. So let's hear from the Bible. Galatians chapter 6, 7 through 9. It says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will also reap from the flesh corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up." So under this idea, or this thought, this truth of reaping and sowing, is a few lessons to remember. And we are talking about money, but there are other levels at which we can apply this spiritually and relationally. So take it in, listen to what God's saying to you in particular, and then apply it however God leads you to respond. So here's the first thing. You cannot produce seeds. Maybe you reap what you sow, and you sow seeds, but you cannot produce the seeds. Try as we might, work as hard as we can, maybe invent a seed inventing factory. It can't happen. You cannot produce seeds. Humans have not figured out how to invent a seed. They can improve seeds, they can change seeds, but they cannot create seeds. The seeds that you have to sow only come from God. He started the first ones. He multiplied them to the point of where we are today so that you can have some too. The fruit that you produce does not come from you. You can't produce it. You can only tend the soil. You can only create the environment for production. You tend the soil. You water. You fertilize. But God produces the seeds. It sounds kind of like that first truth we talked about. God owns everything. Well, it's true. God owns it because He made it. He produces it. God owns it all. He's the producer. We just tend the plant. So you cannot produce seeds. So here's the next one. You reap the same kind as you sow. Galatians 6:7 tells us, for whatever one sows, that he will also reap. When you plant a tomato plant, it does not give you corn back. It gives you tomatoes. When you plant judgment and anger into your family and coworkers and fellow students, your classmates, you will bring back judgment and anger. When you plant grace and love into your family and coworkers, you receive back love and grace. When you make good financial decisions, you reap good financial returns. For sure, it's ups and downs. There's markets. There's risks for certain. Sometimes things don't work out the way you want them to, but in general, good financial sowing reaps good financial harvest over time. Okay, so you can't produce seeds. You reap the same kind as you sow. And then this one, sow to your harvest size, not from your harvest size. All right, it might sound strange, or maybe that's worded a little funny, but here's the idea. You have to sow according to the amount you want to harvest, not according to how much you have harvested. All right? Here's how Paul says it, 2 Corinthians 9:6. He says, the point is this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. I grew up on a farm out in the Croton area, and I remember Dad and Grandpa would buy a couple pallets of seed corn and soybeans or whatever they were putting in the field. And one field would seed would fit on a hay wagon. You know, it'd be on a pallet, and they'd just load it on a hay wagon. They'd take it out there. In one hay wagon of seed to sow, all right? And I don't know what it cost back when I was a kid. I have no idea. But let's say it cost $1,000. And I remember it being shocking to me, like, what? You spent how much money just to throw it in the ground? Oh, my gosh, I couldn't believe it. Say $1,000. But then in the fall after spring and summer, tending the crops, spray the weeds, cultivate it. In the fall, we would take wagon after wagon after wagon after wagon of seeds out of there. Because the harvest was bountiful. It took one hay wagon of seed to get in $1,000, but we could take wagon loads after loads after loads out of there. Maybe they put in $1,000, but they were maybe getting $3,000 back or $4,000. I have no idea, to be honest with you. I don't remember. But what if they only put $500 in? What if they only put half of that in? They maybe only get half back. You sow sparingly, you reap sparingly. You sow bountifully, you reap bountifully. You can do that financially, but think about it spiritually. As part of my 2019 goals or resolution, whatever you want to call it, I've decided that my action step would be to cultivate my spiritual life more intentionally and differently than I have in the past so that God could maybe produce different fruit in me, so that different seeds might result. So I'm going through I read the Bible in a year program, not so that I can say, ooh, I read the Bible in a year. That's not the goal. The goal is some sort of spiritual fruit that God can work in me. The only thing I can do is prepare the soil. I prepare the soil by spending time in the Word. I prepare the soil by praying intentionally to God at various times throughout the day. I can't produce any fruit. That's up to God. I only can prepare the soil and tend the plant. But here's the thing. Just like fields are planted in the spring, this is what Nolan was saying, and you don't see the harvest until the fall, I can't see a difference in me today or tomorrow I just started last Tuesday. It's going to take time for those seeds, for those fruits to develop in my life. And that brings me to the next point. You reap in a different season than what you sow. Don't expect a financial investment to pay off the next day. You got to be patient. You have to wait. It takes time. Also, the bad seeds that we sow, it takes time to work through those. We don't always get it done and taken care of in the moment. It takes time to work through decisions of life, whether they're good or bad. It takes time to reap in the rewards or the consequences of the decisions we've made. So here's how Galatians 6:9 says it. Let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So you reap in a different season than what you sow. If you're investing in the stock market, you know, right now it's kind of going downish a little bit. If you want to invest in the stock market, again, not an expert, but I would wait a little while. Maybe it's going to go down more and you can get a better return on it later if it goes down more. That's just me. You can't expect it to pay off the next day. It takes time. You have to be patient. If you're in your 20s, you're not going to retire based on the stock market this year, okay? Invest in it so that over time, next 30 or 40 years, and if you're in your 20s, I know it's hard to think about 30 years because you've not even been alive that long. Over time, that will tend to pay off. We've had two major collapses since I've invested in the market, and I'm sure there'll be a couple more before I retire, assuming I get to retire. I feel for people who are attempting to retire now and the market is low. So that's something Nolan can help you with maybe. But the point is longevity. It takes a long time. You reap in a different season what you sow. And then the last one is part of your harvest is for sowing again. Don't spend everything you make. You need to save a little. You need to give a little. And then spend the rest. It's okay to spend. It's okay. But keep some back so you can sow some more for the next season. Don't spend it all. I think we all know people like that, or maybe we are people like that. As soon as we get a penny, man, I got a plan for that penny, and I'm going to spend it. Or as soon as we get a penny, I guess I got to put this back because I've already spent that penny prior. Pennies get you nowhere now, so let's say $100 bill. It's expensive. We've already got them spent. Don't do that. Save some of your harvest so that you can sow again. I started the message with the idea of, you get what you pay for. And that's a popular saying for us. You get what you pay for. And all the principles of sowing and reaping apply. But the truth is, in this generation, in this time, in this culture, in this economy that we live in, you rarely get what you pay for. Except in the stock market, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get ups and downs. But especially if for Christmas you had to put something on credit card or on layaway, then you will by necessity pay more than what the item is worth. You're not going to get what you paid for because you'll pay more for it in terms of money. And that's really frustrating because then it can be really hard to get ahead. So this is why we must all do our best to be responsible with what God has given us, to be good managers of God's resources that He owns, to make sure we're sowing good seeds so that we can have a good and bountiful harvest. Next week, we're going to talk about crunching our credit and doubling down on debt. And I know people don't really like talking about money in church. I get that. But I hope you didn't hear anywhere in here about giving to the church, because I didn't say it. I said it earlier when I said, if God leads you to give, give. But that's not why we're doing this series. We're doing this series so that we can all experience some freedom from financial worries. It's all about giving you the tools so that you can experience financial freedom. And beyond that, the principle of sowing, reaping, it applies to every walk of life. You instead of saying this, you get what you pay for, you reap what you sow. I'll leave you with this thought. You only get out of it what you put in. And that's true for a lot of different aspects of life. You get out of a relationship what you put in it. You get out of church what you put in it. You get out of worship what you put in it. You get out of your discipleship what you invest in it. So invest in it wisely. If God's given you some goals and resolutions to pursue in 2019, then you're only going to get out of it what you put in it. So invest with your whole self. Invest with your whole life. And then watch what God does to produce fruit in you. Let us pray. God, we thank you that we can come together here and be honest with each other and have these kinds of discussions. And hopefully, God, nobody feels judged or anything like that, but feels empowered that we can control our finances and they don't control us. That you have put in place principles for us to live by so that we can experience freedom from these financial worries that we all go through. And so, God, as we leave here today, may we also consider what this message might have for us spiritually so that we are on a path towards Christ-likeness and our discipleship is in such a way that we are putting in, investing in it in such a way that you are going to provide the kind of fruit that you would like us to bear out and to see. Because all fruit bears seeds, and those seeds get planted in other people's lives, and we reinvest what you've given us. God, be with us as we leave here today and go encounter a lost and lonely world, people who need to see fruit and experience fruit in their lives, just as we've experienced the fruit in ours. God, bless us as we go. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. God bless you all this morning. We hope to see you next Sunday.